The name of the book is called Lamar Hunt, A Life in Sports, and the author and NFL historian Michael McCambridge is with us on Sports Byline. Let's transition into the other sports. Yes, he was in love with football and he was involved with football, but how did he come involved with soccer and also professional tennis?
Well, in the summer of 66, shortly after the merger had been assigned, Lamar was sitting in his living room and he watched the Wide World of Sports broadcast of the 1966 World Cup final between England and West Germany, one of the legendary games in that sport's history. And he just fell in love with the sport there and then. He said it was different than team versus team. It was nation versus nation. And to a great degree, he spent the rest of his life trying to bring soccer to America and had just begun to see the early signs of that success before he died in 2006. But seeing that World Cup final was the key to his interest in soccer. About a year later, he was approached by a New Orleans businessman named David Dixon, who was convinced that there was a big future for professional tennis. And Lamar signed on for just a piece of it, just a 1/4 interest, but Dixon went under financially within a few weeks, and so Lamar took that over. And that tour, World Championship Tennis, was really the template for the modern professional tennis tour. And Lamar's work there really helped elevate the station of professional tennis players in America and around the world. And that got him inducted into the International Tennis Hall of Fame.
You know, one of the things that surprised me about the soccer was it was a sport that I remember back when they had the North American Soccer League and they were bringing in all the imports from other countries, and it really did not catch on because we didn't have homegrown players there. And being an American businessman and somebody already involved with the American brand of football, I was surprised he was so avid about the sport. Can you help me understand why that was the case with him?
I think what it was is he recognized that once you understood the sport and saw the tremendous fan culture around the sport, the singing, the chanting, the banners, the scarves, it could be just an intoxicating experience. And I looked through this big box that Lamar had of all these old ticket stubs, literally thousands of old ticket stubs, and there's stubs from the European Cup final and the FA Cup in England and soccer matches in Germany and Spain, and he started going to World Cups in 1970 and went to nearly everyone after that for the rest of his life. I think what he recognized was that if American fans could get past the notion of it was a foreign game played by foreigners, that they would eventually respond to it. And I think time has proven him right.
One of the things that I always wondered was, American fans like a lot of scoring, and, you know, having been in soccer myself, I know that it didn't lend itself to television. If you shot it on television too tight, then you didn't get the flow of the game. If you shot it too long and got the flow of the game, you didn't get the technique that was involved, and then you'd have a 1-0 score or a scoreless tie. Was he ever concerned about that? Did he ever try to tinker with the game in order to make it more appealing to the American fan?
I think he came around on that. He was open to experiments earlier on, but I think like a lot of people, as he grew to understand the game better and understand the traditions of the game, by the mid to late 70s, he felt like you had to play the authentic game that the rest of the world was playing. But he was certainly sensitive to that perception. I know that there was in 1974, he invited the famous Dallas sports columnist Blackie Sherrod to come out and see the World Cup. And Sherrod's first story from the World Cup back to the readers in Dallas was something on the order of, Brazil ran roughshod yesterday, scoring at will to beat Greece 1-0. And I think Lamar was sensitive to that, but he also recognized that once people did get to see the game and did get to appreciate the nuances of the game, it could be successful. And I know one of the happiest times of his life was when the World Cup came to the United States in 1994 and not only succeeded, but sold every ticket to every game. And that was really the launch pad for Major League Soccer, of which he also played a vital role.
As you mentioned, he passed away in 2006. Where did he feel the game was and what the future was for the game of soccer when he did pass away?
You know, I found this letter he wrote to one of his fellow MLS owners, Philip Anschutz, in which he said, and Lamar was never one to talk much smack. So the letter is worded something like, I don't want to get too cocky, but I really feel like we're starting to see the results. So, you know, he could tell that it was starting to happen, and I'm sure he would have been gratified to see the response we saw in 2010 to the USA's run in the World Cup, some of the ratings we've seen for the Women's World Cup in recent years, and the fact that soccer is really becoming is enjoying an increasing profile in the American sports landscape.
And, of course, his involvement with tennis kind of ushered in the open era in tennis. And I really feel, and I remember, I think it was a championship in Kansas City, and it was just an outstanding tournament that went on there. And I really felt that that was the golden age of tennis. It was when a lot of people, both from a societal standpoint and from a recreational standpoint, really got excited about tennis, was it not?
Yeah, I think it was. I think you must be thinking of the 1972 WCT final.
That's it.
Which was this five-set classic between Ken Rosewall and Rod Laver, which was actually played in Dallas. And the esteemed tennis writer Bud Collins called it the best match he'd ever seen. And you're right, it dovetailed perfectly with that rush to tennis in the 70s, people going out on the courts. I can remember even my mother, who was not a sports fan and not really an athlete, picking up a racket and playing a lot during the 70s. It really swept the country at that point and became much less an upper crust elite game and something that the masses were taking part in.
And thank you for putting the tournament in the right place for me, because I remember watching it and I was just attached to the television during it. He was also interested in professional basketball, being a founding investor of the Chicago Bulls. Was that just a natural extension? Since I'm in football, I'm in tennis, I'm in soccer, I may as well get involved with basketball?
His wife Norma told me they were taking a jog one day, and he mentioned that he had been approached to invest in it, and she advised him to do so because she knew college basketball was getting more popular. And, you know, I think he was one of 10 investors at the beginning, and the other 9 dropped out because the Bulls lost money year after year after year after year. And through the 80s, I know some of his advisors told him he really needed to let the Bulls go. But then, of course, in 1984, the Bulls drafted this guy named Michael Jordan, and the rest is history. And one of the real pleasures of Lamar's life in the 90s was he saw literally hundreds of those Bulls playoff games. He'd fly up from Dallas to Chicago in the afternoon and fly back later that night. And this is an indicator of the man. He didn't big time it. He never once met Michael Jordan. He didn't want to impose. And I think after their second title, you know, he was in the locker room and they were celebrating, and one of the other Bulls executives said, "Come on, Lamar, let me go introduce you to Michael Jordan." And Lamar said, "No, I wouldn't want to jinx him."
Let me fast forward toward the end of his life for just a moment, Michael. The conversations I had with Lamar Hunt toward the end, I always came away with a feeling that he was not totally comfortable with the direction a professional sport. It was becoming big business, and I think he was worried about it getting out of hand. I mean, he was a businessman, and yes, he liked making money and everything else, but I think he felt that it was going to, you know, be kind of ugly if it got too big. Am I correct in that observation?
I think you are. I don't think that Lamar would have opened a Victoria's Secret store in his football stadium, just to pick an example out of recent events. I think he felt that anything that took the focus away from the game itself was probably, in the long run, not going to be good for professional sports. And so he always talked about competitive balance. He talked about making sure that the small markets, the Kansas Cities and the Pittsburghs, were able to compete on fair footing with the New Yorks and the Chicagos. And that's been intrinsic to the NFL's success. But he also, you know, I think that the real key for me to understanding his life is he never really lost his view of these games as a fan. In 2002, he was about to turn 70, and he'd been fighting prostate cancer for a year and a half, and he decided to fly alone to Asia for the 2002 World Cup, and that was shared by Japan and Korea that year. And there were 10 stadiums in both countries. And he took a look at the schedule, and he mapped it out, and he was determined to watch games in all 20 venues. And he did it, you know, public transportation, commercial flights, just going all around and crisscrossing the two countries. And only to do that at 70 and to do it, you know, on public transportation, only a crazy fan would do that. And he succeeded in doing it.
Is there a particular story through all of your research about him that as you sit back and you have a chance to reflect on the book and the research and the man himself that you got to know that really stays with you and kind of reflects on him more than any other story, Michael?
That's a good question. A few come to mind. If I had to pick one out, the thing that really stood out to me was this terrific grasp of detail, just this granular level of how the game was presented to fans. At one point in 1968, he was trying to figure out what could be done at Municipal Stadium in Kansas City to make the game even more exciting, to get the fans more involved. And I guess he'd seen some movie or something, and he decided, wouldn't it be great to have a heraldry of trumpets, these trumpets that come out that you would hear before the game, and then again before the fourth quarter started, to sort of rouse the fans again. So there's this memo he sent to the chief general manager and said, let's find out what it would cost us. Could we do this? Could we have a heraldry of trumpets for the fan? Get, you know, five or six trumpeters out there to blow their trumpets before the game and again before the fourth quarter. The next week, there's another memo from Lamar to the general manager, and he says, the trumpets sounded great, but they blew their trumpets right at the end of the third quarter before the TV timeout. So the fan enthusiasm had died down again before the fourth quarter. We need to be careful and make sure the trumpets blow right before the first play of the fourth quarter. And it was that kind of just almost obsessive attention to detail that really marked the genius of Lamar Hunt. The word in Kansas City was that he wrote memos faster than the staff could read them.
We only have a minute left, but what was his legacy, and what do you think he wanted his legacy to be?
Well, I think what his legacy should be, what you hear most often is he started the AFL and he named the Super Bowl, but I think his real legacy is competitive balance. It was a major issue in Major League Soccer. It was a major issue in the early years of the AFL, not just in the revenue sharing in TV, but in making sure each franchise had a fair chance to succeed. And that has truly shaped the face of modern American sports and shaped it in, I think, a much more beneficial way than we see other sports around the world. You know, there's not equal revenue sharing in the English Premier League in soccer. Swansea isn't making the same TV revenue as Manchester United, and the competitiveness of that league suffers some because of that. So I think that should be Lamar's legacy.
I want to compliment you on this book. I'm looking forward to reading it, and I think you have really caught the man as well as the sportsman as well. And, Michael, you're welcome here anytime. Thank you very much for joining us on Sports Byline.
Well, it's been a pleasure, and, you know, I don't consider a book officially published until I've been interviewed by Ron Barr, so there it is.
Thank you, Michael. Take care.
Thank you so much, sir.
The name of the book, and I want you to check it out, Lamar Hunt, A Life in Sports. Michael McCambridge, NFL historian and author with us as we continue on Sports Byline.